Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. February is American Heart Month. It's a time to motivate yourself and others to adopt healthy lifestyle choices to prevent heart disease. And research shows that we can be more successful at meeting personal health goals when we join forces with others. So are you already on track? Maybe you need some info on how to take those first few baby steps. With us by phone to help us take action or continue our good work and also to talk about recent research and advances, we have Dr. Kelly Steffen, cardiovascular disease specialist with Sanford's Cardiovascular Institute. Dr. Steffen, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Tell us a little bit about how you ended up in this line of work, because doctors have so many choices about which specialty to choose. What drew you to this area of work and research?
Well, you know, I think obviously heart disease is an epidemic in our country, and there's a lot of patients out there who needed help. I think the part I love about cardiology and heart disease in general is there's a lot of prevention work that we can do, but also it's very satisfying because we can fix people and make people feel a lot better in a really quick period of time. So it's got a nice collection of young patients and old patients, and we really get to see a wide variety of different disease states within the heart.
What do we know about how early heart health and prevention activities, you know, how soon is too soon to be really thinking about this?
Well, really, no, there's no limit on how early we should start. Studies have shown that everybody at some point in their life will likely put some degree of plaque in their heart arteries, and some people start as early as infancy. And so leading as healthy of a lifestyle and modeling a healthy lifestyle for our children is a good place to start with prevention.
Let's talk about how, you know, when we think about cancer, it's one of those things when you tell someone you have cancer, it seems like you have 10 more people who are going to tell you how you have cancer. It doesn't seem like we talk about heart disease as much unless there's a massive heart attack or there's, you know, some kind of emergency situation. But it can fly under the radar that way, can't it? How prevalent is it? You said it's an epidemic. Heart disease is an epidemic in our country. Tell us some of the ways that we see that playing out.
Yeah, you know, I think the tricky thing is we are all aging, which is great because, you know, medical science and advancements have allowed us to live longer, but that also gives us longer time to develop heart trouble. And it is a really common disease state in our country. The other thing we know is that technology has kind of slowed down our bodies, and we spend a lot more time on computers and phones and in front of televisions, which is not good for our hearts. And so that is, you know, one of the things that we see contributes to heart disease is just inactivity. Another thing is that our society is kind of in a supersize me society, and so we eat a lot of bad food and we eat a lot of it. And those are all kind of prevention pieces that help to try and prevent heart disease from happening, but part of what's contributing to why so many people have it.
What are the advances in research right now? What are the areas where we can make big leaps forward in treatment?
Yeah, there's a lot of different things, and that's a pretty broad category, but specifically for prevention of heart artery blockages, we know things that we can do. You know, not smoking, getting more active, following a heart-healthy diet. There's lots of data to show the Mediterranean diet can help decrease the risk of heart disease. But there's also a lot of great medications and procedures out there that can help treat the disease once you have it. And several different new cholesterol medications have come out. There's more and more technology with our stenting procedures as far as opening arteries once we do find blockages. And so many things we could talk for hours about.
Right. And thinking about the national stories that we see, you know, Bernie Sanders had a heart, you know, condition while he was on the campaign trail. And there were a lot of people that, oh, that's going to be the end of his campaign. And now it just seems like he's, you know, he was talking about it on the debate stage with Mike Bloomberg. And they're like, yeah, we both have stents. Let's go. And so there was the sort of a new face of moving on after a heart attack, after a, so how quickly are people getting better, and has that changed, or has that always been sort of the situation?
Oh, no, definitely technology has allowed people to recover from their heart issues much quicker than in the past. Even our procedures where we do angiograms to go look at the heart arteries and put in stents, we let people go home the same day now, where it used to be a 1 to 2 day stay just because of risk of bleeding and whatnot. So technology has allowed us to make the procedure safer and allow us to fix people's arteries much quicker. And so people get right back at them. And even if somebody requires an open heart surgery, they're home in 3 to 5 days and they're sitting up in a chair the same day of their surgery after just having a big open heart surgery. So technology has allowed us to definitely get people healthier quicker. And you know, the nice thing about heart disease is it is treatable. And so that's the key, is that once we do find a problem, it's not a death sentence. We know how to treat it and work to make you feeling better.
Yeah. How are we finding those problems? Are we finding problems, you know, when there are major catastrophes in the heart?
Well, obviously, you know, heart attack prevalence is high, and it's still out there, and we do see a lot of patients who come in because they have symptoms. We also catch some people through screening processes. There are heart screening programs at both heart hospitals in our city, and they help to define people who have risk who maybe didn't know they were at risk and can work through that prevention piece, but also catching a few people through those screening programs who didn't know they had a problem.
Yeah. All right. Who should get screened and when?
Screening can really be done at anybody over 40 years old. Because of what the heart screening entails, which includes a coronary calcium score, we recommend not doing it under 40 years old, at least the coronary calcium score. And that's because as we age, that plaque in our arteries calcifies, and that's what we're trying to screen for. And so the younger you are, you might have plaque, but it wouldn't have had time to calcify yet. So it's not really a valuable test under 40 years old. But so 40-year-olds, people who want to try and do everything they can to decrease their risk, to determine if they have risks that they weren't sure of. So really anybody over 40 with any variety of health conditions or perfectly healthy would be reasonable to get a heart screen.
Are there genetic risks, or are they mostly lifestyle, you know, things that we can prevent?
We know that there are pieces of this puzzle that are preventable, and we know that there are some things that aren't. So there's definitely genetic risk, and the world of genetics is evolving every day and is going to tell us more and more over time. But we know that we can't control those genetics, so it's more being aware. If you know you have a family history of early coronary disease or early sudden death, then you know you should be even screened at earlier ages. But also things we can't control, like the aging process and gender, and those things are not in our control. Controlling things like weight, cholesterol, diabetes, blood pressure, all of those risk factors that we know are prevalent in our society can help take care of this ahead of time.
You mentioned things like inactivity and the sort of supersize me society that we have. And there are a lot of people who want to do, you know, slightly better. I can think about, you know, what I'm eating and take those baby steps. I remember doing an interview once with a cardiologist who said to me, if you're significantly overweight, you could eat half of what you're eating right now and you would be just fine. And I remember just thinking about anybody sitting down with their food and thinking half, and what a drastic change. So I want to talk to you a little bit about this notion of baby steps versus drastic change, and what some of the best ways to approach being more heart healthy are if you already have, you know, you're overweight, you have a sedentary job, like you know that as you're listening to this, to this radio program. What's the best way to begin that actually is going to make a difference?
Yeah, well, I think if you're someone who's ever tried to lose a pound in your life, you know that drastic changes can give drastic results, but they also can change change back drastically too. And so I'm more of in favor of small changes and small consistent changes because it's more sustainable in the long term. As far as, you know, activity, minor things. We all like to make excuses that we're all too busy, and I do the same stuff, you know, saying, oh, I don't have time to work out today. But you could park further away in the parking lot, or you could take the stairs. Even if it takes you 10 minutes longer because you have to take breaks on the stairs, it's still worth that little bit of extra activity that you're not having to take any extra time out of your day other than, you know, a few extra minutes to take the stairs. You know, it's interesting. I talk about the supersize me society, and it's true. If you think of what I'm 41 years old. If you think of what a Happy Meal at McDonald's looked like when I was a kid, it was a little fry and a little hamburger and some kind of milk or whatnot. And now you go there, and they've got 10 times the size of meals.
Right.
And it's because everybody feels like they want more and need more. And so taking little steps, trying to make better choices, even if it means that you cut out one of your snacks for a week and then start backing off on portion sizes at dinner, that's going to be better than what you're doing right now.
Right. How big of a deal is smoking and heart health?
Smoking's bad. You know, we know how much it contributes to heart health, and it's just a challenging thing because it doesn't only affect your heart, it affects your lungs, it increases your cancer risk, it's expensive. Anything you can do to try and quit smoking would be very beneficial to all of your organ systems, but especially your heart. It contributes significantly.
What do we know about the connection between stress and, you know, meditation and stress reduction? Is there a connection between stress and heart health?
There's definitely a connection between stress and stressful lifestyles and heart health. I think it is challenging because, you know, I'll admit, as a cardiologist, I don't know how to de-stress either.
Right.
I have a stressful job. I've got a busy family. I lead a stressful life. And so, yes, meditation and doing anything you can to try and decrease stress within reason makes sense. But there's definitely a correlation. Even if you look at specific events in time, whoever is playing in the Super Bowl always has more heart attacks during the Super Bowl because of stressful situations. And so it just kind of tells you that we know stress contributes. How to make that change, I think, is a little bit harder for us to figure out.
We mentioned research earlier, and you said there was many different directions we could take that conversation. But what I'm really wondering is, you know, Sanford research here in South Dakota, are you know, is there research happening here with scientists and doctors trying to make the world a better place when it comes to heart health?
Definitely. We have several different trials that we participate in at Sanford from a variety of things regarding genetics as well as different devices that our interventional and structural colleagues do. We have a few heart failure trials that we're working through right now. There's a lot of up-and-coming research nationally, but also here locally.
What have we not? Let's talk about women and heart disease. You mentioned gender, and I know you've got some history working with women's heart health. Mm-hmm. Do women have different issues than men do? Do we know more or less about how heart disease presents in women?
Yeah, you know, there are some differences between women and men when it comes to heart disease. It's interesting that studies have shown up to 50% of women, when they have a heart attack, don't have chest pain at all. Hmm. And I think that's been, you know, a tricky thing for people to understand and realize, not just patients, but doctors too. You know, we read the books that say you come in with an elephant sitting on your chest, and that's the way you present with your heart attack. But some women just feel short of breath or weak or nauseous, and they don't really have those real classic specific symptoms, which makes it tricky for everyone involved. So, you know, if you have risk factors, we want you to take those symptoms seriously, where if you're not feeling good, you got to go get checked out. The other thing we know is that historically women tend to be minimizers. They're very much worried about their families and not necessarily as worried about themselves. And so taking a little bit of responsibility and realizing that if you want to be around for your families, you need to take care of yourself too, is important as we're counseling women and their heart health.
Talk a little bit about some of the screenings for cholesterol and blood pressure that people do, because there are, it seems like it's just a part of your regular doctor visit. What are doctors looking for? And when do you know that, you know, everybody resists getting on a medication versus, you know, maybe making some lifestyle changes? How do you parse out some of those decisions in the early stages? Yeah,
sure. And that's why it's important, you know, especially as we age, to do our yearly physical with our primary care doctors. They're the ones kind of on the forefront fighting against some of these risk factors for heart disease on behalf of the cardiologist. So they're going to check blood pressure, and we're watching for signs of hypertension. And it's common as we age for our body to kind of develop high blood pressure. Our arteries get stiffer with age, and so the primary care doctors are watching for that. And, you know, the goal is to keep the blood pressure less than 140 over 90, and if it starts going above that, then you're going to need medications. Based on some other disease states, we might even want it lesser than that. So diabetics should try and stay under 130 over 80. So there's a lot of things that we watch for, and a single isolated blood pressure that's high isn't going to be something that we necessarily treat, but at least we'll watch it a little bit closer, and if it develops, then we can get medication started for that. As far as cholesterol, it's a little bit trickier. There's a lot of different risk scores that we use to try and determine who really needs medications. I think it's challenging because the statins, you know, the most common cholesterol medicines we have, get kind of a bad rap, and a lot of them get flagged as an intolerance. The most common side effect with statins is muscle aches, and so it's something that we watch for, and we watch for closely, and we certainly don't want people to be on medicines that are making them feel poorly, but most of the time they're tolerable and should be taken to try and reduce risk. There are some newer cholesterol medications out that are really kind of revolutionizing our thoughts on cholesterol and cholesterol management. They're injectable medications, so not the favorite of our patients, but they're really helping to bring cholesterol down and reduce risk. There's a special patient population that they are meant for at this point, but someday they may be more mainstream and could be the medications of our future.
Dr. Kelly Steffen is a cardiovascular disease specialist at Sanford's Cardiovascular Institute. Thank you for joining us today and kind of covering the bases there as we talk about American Heart Month. Appreciate your time.
No problem. Thank you.